Get road trip ready with a service checkup at your local Chevy dealer. They can save you time and money and get the job done right the first time, worry-free. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for current service specials or to schedule a test drive.
The coldest case in the Chicagoland area, in my opinion, and Charlie Min, who has produced 45 documentaries about true crime, social issues, school shootings, unsolved crimes, he is doing a new documentary, and he has been in Chicago, and we've met, and he is interviewing victims' families and trying to get information for his documentary. Charlie, thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, Karen, thanks so much for having me.
So, remind our listeners what happened on February 2nd, 2008.
Yeah, it was a sleepy Saturday morning. It was very wintry outside, cold with snow. And out of nowhere, we had a killer walk into a Lane Bryant retail store, of all things, in Tinley Park, which is a suburb of Chicago, maybe 30 miles south. He walks in, poses as a delivery driver. And when he walked in, a little past 10 in the morning, there were two employees and two customers inside the Lane Bryant. Apparently, he engaged in conversation with the employees, and then just moments later, he brandished a handgun, forced all four women to the back room, and then two more customers came in shortly thereafter, forced those two into the back room as well. So now you have six people in the back room, forced at gunpoint. He duct tapes all six, or he tells others to duct tape the other. I kind of find it hard for one person to control six people. One against six, that's a lot. And then he proceeds to shoot all six. 40 minutes later, after Rhoda McFarland, the manager of the Lane Bryant, made the 911 call to police. What's interesting about that 911 call is that it first went to Will County and didn't go directly to Tinley Park, so that may have lost 30 seconds. And that's about how long I think it took for police to miss the shooter, because there was a policeman at the Target parking lot, which is adjacent to the Lane Bryant. And my crew and I went out there last week, and we tested it ourselves. We drove from the Target to the Lane Bryant, and we went very fast, and we did it in under a minute. So police got there in 2 minutes, perhaps because of the delayed transfer they had to do from the Will County police line to Tinley Park. The police went through the front doors, and I think they missed the killer by 30 seconds. So if you believe in the perfect crime, this might have been it, where a shooter kills five people, wounds a sixth, and that miracle survivor is still with us today. And then he just simply vanished into thin air. So if there's such a perfect crime, maybe that was it. I don't know.
Charlie Min is a documentary maker. He was the producer for America's Most Wanted, and he sold films to Lionsgate, Investigation, Discovery. I'm really looking forward to this documentary. Let's talk about motive, because this is the thing that no one can figure out. It was the morning. It was a Saturday morning. This is a mall store. This is not a freestanding store. What would be the motive for this guy to do what he did?
In three simple words, I don't know. The whole thing just doesn't make any sense. You had a bank nearby, walking distance, so why wouldn't the killer, if he needed money, just go to the bank? Why would you pick a Lane Bryant that's credit card driven, that just opened? The whole thing makes zero sense. It makes no sense that it happened. It makes no sense that it's not solved. It's the whole thing is mind-boggling, absolutely mind-boggling.
And if you it's hard to kind of second guess everything that's happened in this case, but there is a very detailed composite sketch. And if you go on the Tinley Park website or just Google composite sketch Lane Bryant, you'll see the guy. You'll see a picture of him. I assume it's a him, although there's been, you know, ideas that maybe it was a woman. But there's braided hair. There's certain color beads. There was a certain jacket, certain jeans, receding hairline. And there was even a voice recording. I mean, it wasn't very clear, but when the 911 call was made, you could hear the guy, the perpetrator, talking in the background. So with all of this evidence, what do you think, why do you think this case has not been solved?
Again, I don't know. And don't forget the reward money of $100,000, which is very, very high. I mean, I've been studying crime now for almost two decades. You rarely ever hear of a reward that high unless the person's on the FBI's top 10 most wanted list. But it's, this whole thing is very strange. When have you ever heard of a 40-minute robbery? I mean, usually when you commit a robbery, you're in and out. Why would you hang out for 40 minutes? That's what I would love to know. What was going on for those 40 minutes? Now, one victim was apparently sexually assaulted. Another victim fought back because there was some blood found on her fingernails. So when I said earlier, one against six, I don't think all six complied 100%. One of them is bound to fight. One of them. You just don't know who you're running into when you hold up six strangers. You never know what their background is.
Charlie, so, you've done so many again, different... Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, go ahead, Patrick. Go ahead.
I was going to say, you've done so many different documentary films on a whole bunch of different criminals and crime syndicate groups and hate groups and everything like that. How often is it that we have such incredibly good detail about the individual perpetrator of a crime, yet this person cannot be found?
Very rare. When have you ever heard of an unsolved mass shooting before? Again, unsolved, let's underline that word 20 times. The only other one happened in Las Cruces, New Mexico, which I happened to also do a documentary on. Five people died in that one as well. I mean, you can't make this up. And it also happened on a sleepy Saturday morning in early February, incredibly. Happened in a bowling alley in 1990 in Las Cruces, New Mexico. So between Lane Bryant and Las Cruces, those are the only two unsolved mass shootings that I'm aware of. Which police department wants that distinction? I mean, it's just flat out embarrassing that this hasn't been solved at Lane Bryant. The one reason I can give you is maybe the composite is not accurate. Perhaps law enforcement has been looking for the wrong appearance for almost two decades now, because don't forget, it came from the eyewitness account of the lone survivor who was traumatized. And from what I understand, she had to be interviewed in increments because it was so overwhelming for her. Now, in my documentary, I do interview some Lane Bryant employees, one of them who specifically knew that surviving witness. And as Karen said earlier, maybe that sketch should be of a woman. I've heard it all since I've done my research. I've read everything under the sun. Maybe the suspect is a woman. Maybe there were two people who did it. If that were the case, though, you would think the sketch would be one of a female. And if it was two people, you'd think it'd be two composites. I guess my point is, when it's been almost two decades and it's not solved, anything's on the table at this point.
You know, and I have found, if you study these kinds of cases that eventually get solved, one of the things, of course, DNA development is going to be crucial, you know, and there was duct tape. And when there's duct tape, there should be fingerprints unless he was wearing gloves. But the idea is sometimes people who are either witnesses, or maybe they knew the perpetrator, or maybe they saw the perpetrator afterwards, were afraid, and maybe now they're in a different place. Maybe they're more mature. Maybe they're motivated by $100,000, or maybe they're just not afraid to talk. And that's what happened in our Brown's Chicken murder, which to me has some a lot of parallels. That case went unsolved for over a decade, and you know, it was the same senseless thing where you had numerous people shot for very, very little money. That might be something that we see down the line. Do you have any theories other than what you've seen? And like, are there any wild theories out there that you've run into since you've been putting this together?
Well, the two people that were killed, the two employees, they were heavily investigated. Perhaps there was some vendetta against them. But let's say there was. Let's say this was a targeted hit. Why would it take 40 minutes? If you see the two employees there and you wanted to get rid of one or both of them, why not just do it right then and there and get out of there within 2 minutes? That's why I don't believe they were targeted. Why would it take 40 minutes? I keep going back to the 40 minutes. That time is too long. It simply just can't be dismissed. I would hate to think that these women were tortured. I would hate to think that they were fondled and taken advantage of. But again, I mean, can you two explain why it took 40 minutes?
Maybe he was trying to cover up the fact that he was targeting those two people by killing a whole bunch of other people.
Yeah,
and why would he wait 40? He waited 40 minutes to shoot everybody. It was a 911 call that apparently triggered him, because you heard him on the tape say, "I'm losing it."
You know, and again, you know, Charlie, you and I have talked about this. I mean, just because he got away with it doesn't mean he's brilliant, and doesn't mean that he's sane. I mean, he could have been strung out on drugs. Right. He could have been so delusional that he walked into the first place he saw. He thought maybe there are a bunch of women there because it's a women's clothing store. And then maybe got caught up with the power of having power over women, you know, cowering around him. I mean, there's a lot of people who get off on that kind of feeling of control and dominance.
But he posed as a delivery man, so it's premeditated.
It
he
is.
Wasn't a delivery man, right? He posed as one.
Right.
So that doesn't make any sense to me.
And he came in with a handgun and duct tape. I mean, give me a break. The guy handed out.
There's a lot of thought went into that.
A lot of thought went into that. You know what, Charlie, would you mind hanging with us until the next segment? Because we started a little late, and I really want to talk to you about some of your other documentaries as well as this one. Is that all right?
Not a problem.
All right, great. So, Charlie, what do you hope this documentary is going to do to move this case to resolution? What are your goals here? Because you are very driven, you are very aggressive, and you are going to stop at nothing to get this crime solved. What do you hope is going to happen here?
Yes, and real quick, for people to give tips and leads, please go to the film's website, thetinleaf5.com, and that's the number 5, thetinleaf5.com. To answer your question, awareness, awareness, awareness. A documentary is just an excellent platform to inform, educate, and raise awareness. And that's what this case needs. If ever a crime needs attention, this is the one. And I believe social media at the end will ultimately solve this case. It won't be the police. It'll be social media, whether it's TikTok, Instagram, or whatever. People need to start talking, ideas, thoughts, and it's going to jar someone's head and lead someone to say, you know something, let me give the information. And here's the part that mystifies me. You don't even have to give your name. Just give the lead, solve the case, and someone will write you a $100,000 check, and no one will ever know that it came from you. That's why everywhere you look, Karen and Patrick, this thing is just mystifying.
I agree.
Yeah, it's incredible. I'd like to ask you a question about sort of where you started. I know you've done a whole bunch of different documentaries on various criminals, El Chapo. You did one on the tragedy at Parkland, which was very, very moving. And you also did one sort of based on discrimination called I Hate Asians. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, that your father was a filmmaker. Is that correct?
No. My father was a doctor.
Okay.
The exact opposite.
Okay.
He's a smart one.
Well, you have to be smart to do what you're doing. So the I Hate Asians documentary, was that based on something you or someone in your family had experienced in terms of discrimination, or why did you make that?
Well, that was out of Albuquerque, New Mexico. That city is very close to me because my broadcasting career pretty much started there. So I've made a few films in New Mexico. My career started there with the Las Cruces Bowling Alley Massacre. So that story was about a massage, a masseuse who owned a massage parlor, Sue Fong, and she was shot, I believe, 10 times in her massage parlor by these two criminals. A shootout ensued after she was held up, and she fought back. I don't think these killers knew that what they were in for. That's why I mentioned earlier with Lane Bryan, if you take a chance and try to control six people, one of them is bound to fight back and put their life on the line. So that's what happened here in Albuquerque. So we had these killers targeting Asians at massage parlors because they were very, very vulnerable. And yes, I'm Asian, I'm Korean American, and let's get right to the point. There's been so much Asian hate thrown our way, and the statistics would prove that, especially in major cities. And it really spiked during COVID because of the whole COVID epidemic. A lot of reports saying that it originated in China. So anyone who looked Asian took some heat, which is really, really unfortunate.
You know, Patrick mentioned the Parkland shooting documentary, which I just finished watching. And, you know, you think that you would be immune to the horror and the tragedy of these things. But, you know, it just breaks you up to listen to the victims' families. And I guess I wanted to ask you, you always say when you're interviewed, Charlie, you say, I'm a victim-driven documentary maker. What do you mean by that? And how do you get the victims families to talk to you? What motivates them, do you think, to open up to you in these films?
Well, let's face it, Karen, we live in a Google world today. We live in a Google YouTube world, and if you don't show up on Google, then they're probably not going to believe you or trust you. So thank God, because of Google, if people Google my name, the whole world shows up with a lot of documentaries. And, yeah, I'm victim-driven. I don't mention the killer's name in any of my films, unless they're wanted. I just think the media should follow my lead, because I think if every time you mention the killer's name, I think you create copycats. Killers want the attention, a lot of them, like the Parkland shooter. So I think if the media from now on followed my lead and never mentioned the killer's name in any news report whatsoever, again, unless they are wanted, I think we'd see less murders in our country, because then killers going in for the fame and the attention, they know that their name will never be mentioned. If you think about it, there's no benefit in mentioning the killer's name.
No, you're Let's right.
Keep the animal's name out of the media. Just call him Killer X, Killer Y. Just don't mention his name. I mean, I don't even think that's asking too much. It's not that difficult.
I agree with you. And Charlie, we've got to go in a little bit, but when do you think this documentary is going to be out, and when it's going to be released so we can watch it?
Yeah, on the anniversary, and I appreciate you, Karen, for taking part in the film. It'll be out right around the anniversary, which is February the 2nd, 2026. I've already talked to AMC Theaters. Thank God there's a lot of AMCs in Chicago, because that's my main go-to company. And, of course, Amazon Prime is where I have all of my documentaries, along with other major streaming platforms. So this is a film business thing, but streaming today has absolutely taken over the world, really. I don't think that's breaking news to anybody, but everything now today is streaming, streaming, streaming. But I still do love the movie theater experience. I think there's nothing like escaping, going to a theater for 2 hours, watching a movie on the big screen, getting a popcorn and a Coke. I mean, I hope we never lose that, but streaming has certainly put a dent into the movie theater experience.
Well, we look forward to seeing this, and we look forward to this crime being solved, because, like I said before, to me, it is the coldest case in the Chicagoland area. Charlie Min, thank you so much for joining us. He will be making a documentary. Do you have a title yet?
Who Killed These Women?
All right. Well, that sums it up, right?
Yes, it does.
All right. And again, the tip line that from your film is thetinley5.com. Is that correct?
Right. And that's the number 5. So if anyone has thoughts, leads, tips, ideas, we want to talk to you.
Sounds great. Well, good luck, and I'm sure we'll see you soon.